Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
So today we are joined by renowned author Lotta Larson, who will be talking to us a little bit about her new book, Shaping Taxpayers' Values in Action at the Swedish Tax Agency. It's so great to have you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't we start a little bit by talking about how you got involved in social anthropology, especially in the sphere of taxation.
Yes, well, it's quite a long story. I came late to academia. My first degree was in economics. I think I always wanted to become a researcher. But in economics, I never really got it. I could not see the economic instances contained in what actually happening in society economically, so to say. So I didn't pursue a researching career there, but I worked with financial software for many years and in many international places. When, so to say, I got in midlife the opportunity to start studying anthropology. And the reason why anthropology was that working with this financial software in many places in the world, it was, you know, it's the same type of work, it's the same type of software, and still places and people were quite different. Same, same, but still so different, so to say. So I started with anthropology, and eventually I read a book about anthropology of the economy, and there I was hooked. So 20 years later, there was someone who posed all these questions I couldn't find in economics. And so that was the first reason for it. And secondly, I found ethnography so incredibly powerful, you know, because it takes people seriously. So anyway, this led to a dissertation on how people justify the purchases of what we call in Sweden black work, which is work off the books or basically not paying taxes when you ought to pay taxes on purchases of work. It was a big issue in Sweden in the early 2000s, and everybody said it was wrong, yet most people seemed involved. So for example, if you think about a guy who repairs bikes, he repairs it for a family and he gets something for it, fine, and perhaps for friends as well, and then he starts doing it for the entire neighborhood. So when does the service become off the books, so to say? When does it become black in the Swedish way of talking about it? Is it the way of organization? Is the amount he earns on it? Is the relationship between people? Of course, if you help, you know, someone in the family, it's not black work. But if it's come people, friends of friends, so to say. So it led me to the law, which says in Sweden that it's all-encompassing, in the sense of that if we exchange services, if you and I help each other, for example, and this service has value for us, it ought to be subject for tax, regardless of how it is remunerated. So if I get money, or if I get a thing in return, or a service in return, in practice, or in theory, it ought to be subject to tax. And thinking about that, and then thinking with Marcel Mauss and his seminal book on the gift, where he says that the gift, or rather exchange, is a total social phenomenon. You give, you receive, and you give back, and a relation is created. So where does this lead us if everything is subject for tax? How do you create the border, so to say? So I realized that it was a Swedish tax agency who had the power, you can say, or perhaps you can also say that the politicians were not really responsible of giving this responsibility for the tax agency. So I approached them with a question of, you know, continuing doing research after my dissertation, and asked them about it. Because in Sweden also, we have one of the highest tax rates in the world. They finance all the welfare we get, but we pay an awful lot of taxes. And we rely also on that all the other pay a lot of taxes, because otherwise we wouldn't pay it, right? So viewing taxes as citizens' explicit economic relation to the state and implicit relation to all other Swedes brings us straight into the core of economic anthropology. So I was really hooked on this idea. And approaching the Swedish tax agency, a legal expert, she thought my questions were quite childish. She says, you know, interpreting the border, it is common sense. Whereas the analyst or the manager for the analysis department, he thought it was a really interesting question. And eventually I was invited to follow a risk assessment project.
So, what was the risk assessment project?
A risk assessment project, it's a way for the agency to find out about issues in society that pose a risk for them to collect the right tax.
Right.
The agency is quite interesting because it has a moral motto. We envision a society where everybody wants to provide their fair share, and they want to collect the right tax, not the maximum amount of tax. And they are actually quite, you know, I found that out coming there, is that it's quite an interesting place, because most is one of the bureaucracies that is most esteemed among Swedes, despite that we pay such a lot of money in taxes. So I became interested in this knowledge a risk assessment project produces, because they are also what the management uses as, basis for decisions about how their future strategies will look like.
So this kind of led you to writing a complete book about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of talked a little bit about this sort of bureaucracy. So if you could go into a little bit more detail of the structural composition of taxation from those who are in control and what it means to construct tax compliance. So could you maybe talk a little bit more about this, elaborate?
Absolutely. The Swedish Tax Agency, as I said, you know, they have a quite astonishing standing in society amongst all the bureaucracies. Again, despite that we pay a lot of taxes. But they have not always had that. So they work quite hard and deliberately of having legitimacy, if you like.
Right.
That we should trust them, and that we trust them that they also treat all of us equally. And this, I actually start the book with that, and it goes back about 50 years with the famous movie director Ingmar Bergman. And he was actually arrested with the help by the tax agency, with the help of policemen. They came into one of the big, or at Dramaten, which is our biggest theater here in Stockholm, and arrested him on that he had been cheating with taxes. And obviously, this didn't come down well in society, because who, not in Sweden and nor abroad. And Ingmar Bergman reacted, obviously, quite strongly to this. So they started really working with values of you know, basically treating taxpayers in a different way. And I show this quite a bit in a chapter about a random audit control, which was one of the components of this risk assessment project. And the random audit control is a way of looking into society, see where problems of a specific tax problems are, and it's a way of doing audits. And what is interesting is that I found in this random audit control is that it's very deliberately secured way of working. They really, you know, make it statistically correct, and they want to ensure that we do things very, very correctly and uniform ways. So that's the internal control. And in some way, it also corresponds to the way they always work, which should work very professionally, very controlled, very uniformly throughout Sweden. But on the other hand, in the contact with the taxpayers, they talk a lot about these auditors, that they should be reasonable, they are empathic, and we should cooperate. We should really try to understand the position of the taxpayers and his everyday working, what the problems are, what the challenges is for, in this case, some sort of entrepreneurs to pay the correct taxes. So they very, very explicitly work with this, and all in order, not just to be nice, but in order to make people comply with taxes.
So, yeah, you kind of talked about sort of this structure also of the risk assessment project, or rather what its aims were. And sort of a piece of this was the section on attitudinal surveys, which I, of course, was rather intrigued by. And you touch upon its limitations, relevance, and its ability to be sort of problematic. So I was wondering if you could explain these attitudinal surveys to our audience and the implications of these surveys on tax agency.
Perhaps I should first say that the risk assessment project, it was based on one, the attitudinal survey, which I just come back to, and then this risk assessment project, right. And then, of course, a lot of other type of knowledge.
Sure.
But getting back to your attitudinal survey there is that, first of all, it's attitudinal surveys, you know, I guess you have yourself been subject to them when you are called up and someone in the call center asks you about certain questions about a certain topic, right? Because people want to know more about it. The political services or political surveys is what we usually encounter, but also marketing and so forth. And the agency's own reputation relies on survey data.
Sure.
As I said, you know, they are esteemed. And how do they find out that they are esteemed? Well, they make services to individual taxpayers and to corporations. And they ask of taxpayers' views on the agency, their views on diverse type of tax cheating, and, you know, when you are in contact with the tax agencies, do you think it's a good, do you get a good response, or do you get a bad one? Are they quick in handling, blah, 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 blah. But the implications of taking views on something and say that they actually are, there is a tension in that. And in the risk assessment project, they would do a survey because this is what we always do.
Right.
So they very carefully constructed questions about, you know, relevant to this risk assessment project, and engaged a call center to perform them. And first of all, I thought, wow, this is quite a boring subject, mm-hmm. the survey. Would like to, you know, write anthropologically about a survey. But starting to think about it, it's quite an interesting thing because, you know, survey and surveillance comes from the same etymological root.
Sure.
And there is tension between the verb to look carefully at,
right,
and noun, a general view of the people. It is a secret to be revealed, not in the individual answers per se, but in the whole, right?
Right.
So I found John Laws he had an article seemed like a survey, and he talked about an archaeology of Serbia's, whereas I could actually make an ethnography of the Serbs. So I adapted a little bit his views to the what I saw was made at the agency and also performed at the call center. And so what you actually do, what I can show is that, you know, you make this particular group of taxpayers into a problematic group just by posing questions about them.
Yeah.
So always, although, you know, survey and its questions can be very, very carefully made.
Definitely.
And they spend, I tell you, the analysts spend a lot of time doing it. A survey is never innocent.
Sure.
Yeah. So, the way the analyst spoke about it was that do taxpayers answer the truth to certain questions? And especially when it comes to questions about tax cheating, you know, it is a little bit sensitive questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Respondents trust that they are anonymized. And so they tried to come around this. They wanted people not to scorn at their questions, but take them seriously. But then sitting at the call center, I was sitting with an interviewer there for a couple of days, and she said at some point, and now I come to the porn question.
Hmm.
And I said, porn question? No, what do you mean? Well, you know, this is the metaphor from an earlier survey about watching porn on the internet.
Hmm.
Of course, hardly no one we asked did this.
Right.
And the question here for the risk assessment project was that, you know, have you made any of these deductions yourself?
Hmm.
And there were very, very few who said they had. Whereas in truth, according to the random audit control, there were very many, many people who have made those deductions.
So it's kind of like this, it stems sort of like this, this problem that kind of exists between like transparency between like survey and like what is like truth in tax agency. So it seems like you were able to really get at a lot of really interesting problems and really analyze them at its core. So I was just wondering like what it was like for you as a social anthropologist to conduct field work in this arena, especially in terms of the Swedish tax agency.
Well, first, I have to say I'm really grateful to them because I think they were very brave to let me in.
Yeah.
You know, I was sitting there and I tell you, literally hundreds of hours of transcribed material from these meetings.
Yeah.
And of course, it was not always, you know, easy for them, or in the beginning it was not easy for them because it was a handful of analysts doing this. And then having someone who's sitting there typing and listening in and recording what they were doing. But they got used to me, I guess, as you get used to everything. I had my tasks and they had theirs.
Right.
And I think also that they were, you know, a little bit curious, or they were very curious about what I would, you know, say about them. If they could learn something about themselves, the way they had learned something about buying black work from my dissertation.
Right.
I have presented my book at the agency, and we have done quite a few different things together, so to say, of looking into different types of qualitative knowledge. And and we have had many discussions over the years of different tax issues.
So how does your work sort of relate to other professionals or practitioners in the field? I know it's sort of novel because it's you work in a field that's intersecting economics with anthropologists. So I was wondering if you could speak to other professionals or practitioners in anthropology in your field.
I hope I do. I will do. I mean, I hope I will inspire.
Yeah.
I hope I will inspire other anthropologists to take on taxation because it's just so many interesting questions in there. You think about, you know, this is one of the most boring subjects there is, mm-hmm. which I, until you start really thinking about what is going on here. But speaking to the broader field of people interested in taxation, from practitioners to researchers from other disciplines, I hope that I can show that anthropology have a lot to offer.
Right.
I mean, we don't give the entire response to what tax compliance is, but we can also add with different types of knowledge. And for example, this of taking a holistic view of what tax compliance is in this sense. We take people seriously. We don't do surveys. We don't do experiments. We don't try to just measure based on some sort of, well, of models or theories of what, why people, you know, take economic decisions of different ways. And we also can provide a view from the inside. In this case, I was there for 3 years at the tax agency. So I think we have a lot to offer, and I hope we will.
Yeah. And what about, like, I mean, we've touched a lot about the structural aspects of your book and a lot of conceptual drivers and motivations for your book. But what is it that you hope to inform readers and maybe some of our audience members who are considering reading your book? Sort of like, what is like the motivating message that you wanted to drive home through this book?
To other anthropologists, to do both a sort of, let's say, a modern anthropology or engage with a very classical anthropological question of, you know, economic exchanges and the relations they create.
Yeah.
But how to say, on a larger scale, perhaps, because I'm studying this tax agency or taxation more broadly. In this book, I study the tax agency, right? So that's for anthropology, but for other tax practitioners or people interested in the tax compliance field, it's also to show that knowledge about taxation is much, so much more than just a well-written or a legitimately written tax system or tax laws that, you know, can be elegantly and legitimate from a legal perspective, but we also have to see how they are interpreted and practiced, if you like. So that's what I hope to convey that. And that's hopefully also give a good read about something that sounds very boring.
Yeah, absolutely. When I first was reading your book, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to read about taxations, which sort of seems like a dry subject, but it was really quite fabulously written. So of course, I think a lot of our audience members want to know what sort of the next step is with this research, what kind of projects you have going on right now, sort of any future plans you have for us.
Right now I'm in the midst of a Horizon 2020 funded project. Again, it's an interdisciplinary project called Fair Tax, where we look into issues of trying, basically, very interdisciplinary. Here are legal scholars, economists, and sociologists, anthropologists like myself, who look into different aspects of making taxation fairer on a European level. And in the end, the legal scholars will also write policy prospects. What I'm looking into is something that the OECD has proposed as a way of working between tax authorities and big multinational corporations mainly. And this is a way of working called cooperative compliance. And I coordinate this project on a Nordic level, where we also collaborate with UK and Irish scholars. It is a comparative study. We intend to do this of this way of working cooperative compliance because the OECD and the tax authorities themselves, they try to boast this way of working and saying this is the future, this is the modern way. But what we can show is that not only us, other scholars have shown that as well, is that there's a lot of problems with it. And in Sweden, actually, which is quite astonishing given the reputation the Swedish tax agency has, it is a failure. So I published a report which is called Sweden, a failure of cooperative compliance. And here, again, we try then with all these countries we have, the Nordic countries and the UK, Ireland, the US and the Netherlands, we're going to try to make a comparison of projects which are in different legal constituencies with different tax systems and with different ways of working and still try to get some sort of essence of what works and what does not work. So we'll see what if it will be possible to do that. But it's very the essence is that this is based on qualitative studies, other ways of working, engaging with all stakeholders. And this is what's new to this.
So is there a lot of field work involved?
It has been, or my colleagues are doing more field work than I am, because in Sweden, it was a failure, as I said. And the failure actually sort of came about before my eyes when I was doing this, is that there's only one participating corporation in Sweden. So we try to do participant observation, qualitative interviews, and of course the document studies and so forth.
So will this be culminating in like a book at all? Because I'm sure our audience wants to hear back from you.
This would not, perhaps a book in the long run, I think, to do the comparative studies.
Sure.
Right now, published a report on this. And the interesting thing is that I presented my work at the tax agency and also for the other stakeholders. And the tax agency, they agree. It is a failure.
Okay, well, it's been so great to have you on our show today. And also, like, this new culminating project also sounds really interesting and should be really intriguing to find out the results of sort of a cross collaboration that you have going on. And again, I urge everyone to pick up a copy of Shaping Taxpayers: Values in Action at the Swedish Tax Agency by Lotta Larsson. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me.